Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
And hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show, where we cover all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation, even if PlayStation is occasionally quiet. But we actually do have a few big PlayStation pieces of news to discuss. This week, I'm joined by Jada Griffin.
Hello again.
Hello. Also joined this week by Mark Medina.
Yeah, last episode of the year. I'm very excited. I don't understand what's happening next to me. I could have swore you said Matt was going to be on, and there's just this weird queue thing happening. I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, Matt's supposed to have been on the show the last couple weeks, and he hasn't been able to make it in yet. The queue's been pretty bad for him, so we're hoping he can make it in at some point. But, you know, these issues with online games and online shows, you just kind of, oh, Matt!
Oh, Hey, everybody!
Oh, wow.
You're back.
I've been waiting since last night to join, and it, you know, it just, oh.
Well, you only have about 15 minutes before your next meeting, so it should be fun. But no, Matt Kim is also joining us this week. Matt, thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you.
Happy to have you.
That was a very visual gag. If you want to know what just happened, you have to go to the video.
This is how we get the views.
Like and subscribe on YouTube, you know?
Yeah. Ring that bell, as the kids say.
Video exclusives.
We are, as Mark mentioned, this is our last Podcast Beyond for the year. We will be back in the new year. I think IGN is back up and running pretty much the first week of the new year in 2022. But this will be our last proper sort of Beyond for the week. And the year. So we've got some topics to jump into. And also for those looking ahead, though we'll be, you know, dark for a little bit at the end of the year, there will be a podcast going up next week that sort of is a cross podcast of all the shows at IGN. So look forward to that. But before we get there, we do have some PlayStation news to jump into. And for those who are listening and or watching the week this goes up, I am contractually obligated to mention that IGN is hosting the US premiere of the Matrix Resurrections. I know what that movie is called. It's on December 18th at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll be revealing an exclusive clip from the movie ahead of it coming out a few days later during the stream, and we'll also be featuring interviews with the cast of the film. It's a bunch of wonderful people in that movie. IGN's own Max Scoville and a few others will be all a part of it, so go check that out if you're looking forward to the Matrix Resurrections, as I am. I cannot believe we're getting... Nice. Moderating chat, I assume.
Yes, exactly. Live moderation of the chat. Like, no, you can't say that word. I'm going to have I'm going to have to hide you from our viewer list.
Yeah. Sorry, Keanu, you can't say that. Come on. No,
Keanu
but go check
would
that out.
Never.
No,
Keanu never. Would never. No. We should, we should make that clear.
Make that very clear.
No, yeah, Keanu would be perfect on any stream. Keanu, please come on the show. I don't care if you don't play video games, including the ones that you're in. Please come on the show. But anyway, let's jump into some PlayStation news. We do have a few topics to talk about this week. We'll bounce around between a couple of them. But basically, you know, right before the year is decided to end, there doesn't seem to be any sort of PlayStation event happening, which I don't know if any of you knew this, but was a rumor running throughout this year that PlayStation was going to surprise drop PlayStation Experience was a leak that kept happening throughout the year. That hasn't happened, but instead we have gotten a few pieces of information from PlayStation. And the first one I'm going to bring up is you can now get a different colored PlayStation 5 console, kind of. PlayStation is now revealed that they are going to be distributing themselves. These are first party created PS5 console covers, so you can essentially switch out your PS5 faceplates from the giant white fins that you may have. For five other colors. They all have this galactic theme to them, which has been running through their DualSense colors so far. But they are Midnight Black, Cosmic Red, Nova Pink, Galactic Purple, and Starlight Blue. Black and red will be coming in January, and pink, purple, and blue will be coming in the following months. Two different versions of each color will be available for those who have either the disc or the digital edition PS5. Mm-hmm. And they also are introducing a couple other DualSense colors to match these, since they did have a few others out there with the red and black already. But they will have the teal-ish color, the purple and the pink. The console covers themselves are currently only available pre-order directly from Sony. They're going to be $54.99 available to purchase, and will be available in specific regions, and others will be announced throughout next year. But, you know, this is, I think, something that I at least have been calling for a lot on the show since pretty much the PS5 was revealed. And these sort of come on the heels of a first year of people creating third-party PlayStation 5 covers that Sony either clamped down on with
and getting in trouble for it.
Yes. But there have been some legal messes that we could dive into. But first of all, I think on just the first two questions I want to ask very quickly are, one, are you excited that Sony is doing this? And two, are you going to buy any of these colors? And Jada, I'll start with you.
Yes, I'm excited they're doing it because I know a lot of people hate the stark white of the console because it's such a big object in all of our entertainment stands now. That's something that is just, you know, that pale white is just really kind of contrasts some people's setups. So I'm excited that they're at least doing something about it for those people. I don't know if I'm personally going to get one because my entertainment stand is white, so it kind of matches my whole setup for me. I might get a black one just to see how that looks. But the white doesn't bug me because of my setup, so probably not right off the get-go. Maybe if we get a special edition.
Yeah, and I do want to get to that bit of the discussion as well in a little bit. But yeah, Mark, what about you?
Yeah, so the problem I'm facing right now is if they'd announced this like a month ago, I probably would have got one. I don't know if you'll be able to see. But right there is, that's my Xbox, my Switch, and my PlayStation. The Switch is the new OLED one, and I could have gotten it in black or white, and I got it in white. So now two of my consoles are white. So what I actually need is for my Series X to be white. And so, no, I won't be changing the color for that. I did pre-order the blue controller, though, because thing is awesome. I already have the red one. I have a white one that's got a little bit of drift.
America.
Yeah. I kind of like this idea. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Exactly. And so I kind of like this idea of just occasionally buying a controller. That way, when they break down, I can buy a new one because they will break down. So might as well get different colors.
And I think I don't remember the rollout of colors in the PS4 generation. It was, you know, 8 years ago at this point. But I do feel like the fact that we've already gotten five controller options, one, probably means they've heard a lot of people who are like, why is white the only option? And two, feels like a quicker solution than we got last gen, but I could just totally be misremembering because I was still in college when the PS4 came out.
I'm trying to remember because I was selling those. I was slinging those when they came out, as they say.
Jada was in a dark alley somewhere.
Right. Hey, you want a PS4? Like, hey.
You want,
I got
fours.
I got golds. I got silvers. I got reds. What you need? I want to say that the PS4 generation was a little bit quicker, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. I want to say right out the get go that they had. Right at the start there was only the black, but I want to say like, probably like 3 months later they released two new colors, and I think that's almost on track with what they did with the black and red. So maybe they're on the same path line for it and they're following that same trend. I know there was a lot of colors for the PS4 within the first like year or two.
Yeah, I'm going to try to look this up to see if I can find the timing. But yeah, Matt, what about you? Are you interested in any of these, and just how do you feel about this being an option now?
Yeah, you know, so this is a can of worms. Okay. I like the current PS5. You can see it, I think, on video right there. It's so big and so huge. And I kind of like that about it, right? Like, they're gonna, I feel like they're gonna come out with a PS5 Slim in like 3 years or something like that, and it's gonna be like a box, right? And I, knowing this, I'm like, no, I want that big thing that immediately gets everybody's eyeballs to look at it. That being said, my media center is a rustic classic bookshelf style. It doesn't have any like color matching or whatever like that, so like it doesn't matter what color I get for it, because it's just not going to look good regardless. I like purple. I think I'm going to get the purple, and I think I'm going to do a little mix and match. I think I'm going to get a purple top and then keep the white bottom or whatever, like mix
that's
it
smart.
Like that, do a dual tone kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know, these are cool, I guess. What it is like, what I've been noticing is that like Xbox has already kind of gotten like a head start on the custom like design. Like they got the Halo Series X.
They've been doing
right?
a lot.
They got that SpongeBob one.
Yeah, the SpongeBob one. I'm waiting to see when we're gonna start getting. I guess like when the big games start coming out, right? Then we're probably gonna get like a Horizon Forbidden West theme special edition or God of War Ragnarok special edition.
And that's kind of what I want to talk about with these. Like, I think the bigger deal is I think special edition consoles are very cool, and it's great to see those and to celebrate all these launches, but they are just so cost prohibitive if you already own the system, like justifying buying a second one, unless it's a need, like if you have a huge family or you're needing to for a certain reason in your home, or you want a second at that point in your life, or you need to buy a new one. Like there are reasons to get another console, Mark, but there are, I bought a second Xbox so my girlfriend and I could play Halo. So I very much understand the need, but like, you know, just to go out and be like, I like God of War. I want the special edition God of War. I like Spider-Man. I like the special edition Spider-Man. That gets to be thousands of dollars over the course of a generation. Yep. This is like, okay, we can just put out faceplates, and everyone who likes God of War can get them.
Yeah, yep. I'm way more open to the idea of spending $50. And I assume if it's special edition, they'll probably charge even a little bit more.
A little bit
but
more,
But, like,
yeah.
getting, yeah, a Spider-Man-themed PS4 Pro when I already have a perfectly good PS4 Pro is a ridiculous notion for me. Like, I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yep.
So I wonder if they have data somewhere that shows that it's like, hey, when we have to release an entire console, this is how many sell, and like, I bet we could sell more faceplates. So
I wouldn't be surprised. Oh, God, finish your point. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so I assume that that's the data they're looking to collect, is they're going to release these five and they're going to see how much of a hit they are.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, so hey,
there we go. Jinx, you owe me a year lining your spot in queue. For Final Fantasy 14. I wouldn't be surprised if we started seeing these kind of faceplates show up in like the flashier collector's editions for these marquee games. So, you know, like the Horizon has that, you know, the Regalia, I think, or Regala edition coming out. It's obviously not going to have the faceplates with it because they were announced afterwards, but I wouldn't be surprised if our next big like God of War came with God of War plates for the like $200, $300 collector's edition that they.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
I could see them selling them in a package like that for like a limited time, and then more mass appeal, like if there's clearly a need for it. Yeah, I totally could see that being the way to go. And then you also get all the like figures and the art books that you want, but you don't have to buy another system you do or don't need.
Yep.
And I think for people because like that's an easy sell, right? Like limited edition consoles, that's hundreds of dollars. I think for those people who really want like the full experience, like maybe there's some like potential with the filling part of the PS5 to design with, right? So you can sell like a God of War faceplate, right? But for someone who wants like the ultimate God of War PS5, there's also like some like extra design part for the middle.
That's not removable though, right? It would just
that's
be
not removable exactly.
That
right?
would just
that
be
would
like
be,
a special edition. Yeah.
Yeah, like that would be the full thing. Like you would be Got paying it. Full Got price. It. For like the complete edition, but for people who just want like a minor cosmetic upgrade, then you can get a much cheaper faceplate without having to buy a whole second console.
Yeah,
I will say $55 is a lot more reasonable than I thought that they were going to be with it. I if you had made us guess on how much they would be, I would say anywhere from $100 to $150.
It's two pieces of plastic, so, Mark. How much could it be? $10?
But the display ones I don't doubt at all that they're cheap. Mm-hmm. I am surprised Sony is selling them for what many would see as a reasonable price. It would not have surprised me if they're like, it's $100. It's $150.
Like, I would have at minimum thought $75 was what these would go for. And it's not a cheap thing to buy. It is, you know, roughly the price of a game. But yeah, in terms of what they could have probably charged, I'm glad we're not in some stratosphere that I don't even want to ponder. I did also wonder, this was just, I was literally watching the B-roll of all of them on screen. You can all tell me if you think this is crazy. I also wonder how much these were born of like, oh, we can't produce the internals for PS5s right now, but we can produce the faceplates because we can produce plastic like that, but we can't get all the chips. So let's just spray paint these and sell them in different colors. I don't know how much supply shortages might have played into these coming out when they did, but...
You know what's kind of nuts, though, is I remember distinctly years ago when Reggie was still president of Nintendo of America, that he was doing an interview and he just said that people just don't buy white consoles, right? Like,
interesting.
Across the board, they just kept looking at their data and they're like, people don't buy white systems. And I'm just like, it's kind of crazy to me that PlayStation, like, knowing this, was like, put out a white system, even though it seems like the general trend in North America is that people do not like, for whatever reason. And like, I kind of notice it in like other consumer products. Like, I was shopping for a Kindle recently, right? And it was like the black Kindle was like back ordered and sold out until like December, but the white one was like super available. You can just pick one up. And like, that's anecdotal or whatever, but like, every time I see a surplus of like white systems or like white iPads or something like that, it always makes me think back to that thing Reggie said about like how consumers just don't buy white products.
Yeah, I remember. I just want to tag on real quick, Mark, and then I'll let you go. White and green are like the worst selling console colors.
A green console, like, Xbox, no.
And I mean, when was the last Xbox that was actually green though?
None of them.
Not even the first one.
I think there was a special edition for the first one. But yeah, white and green are like the worst selling ones. And I think, you know, to Matt's point about, you know, white iPads and stuff, you know, from all my time working in like different retail and customer stuff back in the day, like, people just don't like white because it shows the dirt so easily. It's so easy to show, and they like the appeal of it not looking dirty, regardless if it is dirty or not. So like, black is like such a safer color to go with than that type of thing.
Totally.
I haven't noticed anything with my DualSense. I do. You can see it on camera. I do have a white mouse, and it this thing was like $100, and I bought it brand new probably 6 months ago, and it has markings on it that just like will not come off. But when I was at GameStop, and obviously this is unscientific, when I was at GameStop buying my Switch OLED, everybody was getting the white one. But that's probably because the Switch has always been black since 2017. And for me personally, I was like, if I'm going to drop money on an OLED, I want it to feel different. Because, you want to be able to see it on your shelf and be like, that's the new Switch, versus obviously they've come out with like Animal Crossing ones. I think they've come out with white ones since. But that was just that differentiating factor for me. It makes me wonder if there was a white version at launch, if that would have been the less popular.
Well, and it's interesting that they went with a white console from the start, because they had, you know, obviously the tradition of PlayStation's, other than the gray beginnings of the PS1, was very much like the PS2, the PS3, and the PS4 were all, the original offering was a black console, and then they released special edition consoles and whatnot, but it was a very stark difference, and I think that was intentional on their part. But I'm very curious if the fact that they only had a white version at launch did affect some people's sales. And I wouldn't be shocked if we start to see, once the console is more regularly available, people just be able to go into a store and buy in box a red or a black or a purple one. I think
about PS5's design was intentional. I think they wanted it to be weird. Right? Like, you can go and look at reaction videos and everybody is just like, ooh, like, that looks so strange, right? I've seen montages of that first reveal and everyone's just like, what? Like, it got so much like buzz because it looked futuristic, right?
It's the visual version of when Nintendo called it the Wii, and everyone was like, what? Why would you do that? And then we all, you know, the Wii became just synonymous with it. Like, it was no problem. And so, yeah, I think this was like a visual. You're totally right. I think we had talked about it on the show way back when with Max, Brian, and Lucy of like, we're all weird art school kids. And so we were like, this speaks to us in a weird way because it looks like a bizarre alien, you know, modem. And so...
Yeah.
I like they were going for something and I think it worked to that extent, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if kind of Matt, as you were saying, like whatever the slim design is will probably be a little bit more like kind of
contemporary,
yes. Conservative.
Yeah. Yes.
Conservative. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, of course these are, you know, going to be available to those who want to purchase them, early next year. Hopefully there will be more PS5s for people to be able to purchase as well to go along with these. But just wanted to mention those because it is sort of a new era of, I think, more customization for your console than we've had from PlayStation in a while. And so this is where I also just want to say, PlayStation, please, for the love of Sackboy, make a design lab for DualSenses. I want to be able to custom design a DualSense, please.
Yeah, let us know in the comments if you plan on buying these plates, but you don't have a PS5. Because I would love to know how many people are going to just buy these to be like, when I get my PS5, it's going to be aqua blue.
I've seen comments about that already. I'm sure
that's going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Mark, as someone who buys vinyl records, even though I don't have a record player, let me tell you.
We have had a broken record player for years, but we keep buying vinyls instead of buying a working record player. So yeah, man, I feel like
I love my record player. I get so much use out of that sucker. But yeah, continue.
I don't know. No, I was just pretty much. Do I have vinyls?
I thought Matt was going further with that point.
I've been lucky in that every place that I've moved in with my roommates, they have a record player.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Oh,
nice.
But one day.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
We'll be on my own. Sans record player and a box of vinyls that I can't play.
I was gonna say dozens of vinyls and nothing to play them on. The the saddest story since used pair of baby shoes. Anyway, moving on from there, PlayStation did have a little bit of extra news, kind of under the radar, but I do want to talk about it because I do think it's an interesting one to speak to this year. Late last week, PlayStation announced their fifth acquisition for the year of a studio known as Valkyrie Entertainment, which will, quote, aid in the development of key PlayStation Studios franchises. Valkyrie Entertainment is maybe not a name most people out there have heard. I think is probably not a wild thing to say. But they have worked with PlayStation in the past for quite some time. Most recently, they've been partnered and working with Sony Santa Monica, both on God of War 2018, and have been working with them on the development of God of War Ragnarok. They've also worked, you know, across company lines. They worked with Microsoft on things like Halo Infinite, Forza Motorsport 7, and other titles, both on console and PC. Mm. So they very much feel like a studio that's going to continue to aid and support other PlayStation studios in this case, which is sort of what we've seen with Nixes as well, which was acquired earlier this year, a studio kind of most prominently known for PC ports and handling things there, that they obviously do have like in development or in-house developers who help the creation of games. But I thought this acquisition was really interesting because I'm curious what you all think of sort of PlayStation's total acquisition plan so far. As I said, this was the fifth studio they have acquired this year: Firesprite, Bluepoint, Housemarque, Nixes, and now Valkyrie. And nothing that they've acquired, there are some tremendous teams in there, but nothing they've acquired has been like, oh, we need to respond to the Bethesda acquisition, or we need to acquire studios in the same way that Xbox did when they acquired, you know, what was it? I think Compulsion, the Hellblade developers, forgive me, I'm blanking on their
name. Ninja Theory,
thank you.
Double Fine.
I wish someone knew their name, but yeah, they acquired like six studios all at once, and then Double Fine within a year, and then Bethesda a couple years later. Like, they very much were going for names to help bolster their first party studios, and like just to have games. To me, this feels like PlayStation wants to make sure the teams that they have and the teams that they know are working well have all the support they can, while also still introducing some new smaller teams into the mix. I'm curious what you all think about this, because this isn't like a, oh my god, they have bought the biggest teams in the world. Like I said, I think most people probably didn't even know about Valkyrie before this.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was just gonna say, so like they're two, I would say they've acquired two big ones, right? They acquired Bluepoint, which primarily made PlayStation games already, which, you know, they're famous for the remakes they make, most recently Demon's Souls, and then Housemarque, which was basically full on PlayStation as well with PC versions of their game. I don't think we're gonna see that. The Bethesda level, or I guess ZeniMax in this case, would be, is like, that's an acquisition I don't think we're going to see for a very long time, like an acquisition of that scale. The fact that they acquired a huge publisher that owns some of the most beloved studios of all time, like, I just don't even know what PlayStation's version of that is. I think you nailed it when you say, like, this is more on the level of, like, Double Fine. Like, hey, Double Fine, you're going to make games for Xbox now. We're going to be hands-off. This is just, your games are going to come to us. And that's kind of what it kind of seems like with Housemarque and Bluepoint. I would be interested if PlayStation really wanted to get into the game, where they would look to. Ubisoft, well, like, you know what I mean? Like, so it would have to be something of that level.
My thing is, I don't think they need to. Like, the whole Bethesda acquisition was because Xbox needed games.
They needed to bolster their first party, where PlayStation already has a bustling first party.
And so PlayStation acquiring, I think Valkyrie and Nixes are the two that make the most sense to me. And just to sort of give why I think this is the reasoning, and you can all tell me if I'm crazy, but like, in the PS3 generation, even though that was a weird console to develop for, Naughty Dog had the output of the three Uncharted games and The Last of Us. Whereas on the PlayStation 4, they had Uncharted 4, Lost Legacy, which admittedly started as a DLC but grew to something a little bit bigger, and then The Last of Us Part 2 at the very, very end. Like, even a company like Sucker Punch had a few Infamous games in there, and then had Infamous Second Son at the very start, and then Ghost at the end. I feel like PlayStation wants those teams to be able to get back to a more, like, 2 to 3 year cadence rather than a 4 to 5 year cadence. And so these teams being internal, having direct access, not having to worry about, you know, signing contracts or dealing with any of the minutia of business, can just
right. Hey, Valkyrie, oh, you're family. Working on Halo right now. Damn it. Like,
yeah, they don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you have to look at it. Like, games are, in the terms of scale and scope, are only increasing. We're only getting bigger. Nobody has tapped the full potential of the PS5 yet, like, or the Xbox Series X for that matter. Nobody has tapped the full potential. So, like, I look at this as Sony is future-proofing their business model, like you're saying, Jonathan, to increase the cadence of those games. I think it's going to make these type of acquisitions make sense for Sony to do, because this allows them to have the, you know, the more core things focused on inside of Insomniac. Now, while they're building Spider-Man 2 and everything and Wolverine, they're able to focus on the core things of what they want to do with Spider-Man 2. And they can have an additional team like Valkyrie come in and like, hey, we need you help to kind of buffer out some of these other side parts and assist in these different areas. That way, the main team, the main creative team and design team can focus on these core principles of the game. I think it makes sense. And I think it's the right decision for Sony this generation.
Actually, what about you, Matt?
It's an act of sabotage.
there you go.
If Sony buys out all of these support studios, who will help out on the next Halo? Nobody. And now Microsoft is screwed.
That's it. There you go.
It's secret subterfuge.
Tinfoil really, time. Know,
I swear I saw a comment along those lines somewhere when I read about the Valkyrie acquisition, and it was just so funny to me that they're like, this is a smart power play, hoarding all the support studios and starving the other big players.
There are so many support studios.
That's so funny.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's like I'm of the opinion that Jonathan's right? Like, they already have a robust first party studio lineup, so that they don't need to make the kinds of like Bethesda acquisitions that Microsoft has, because Microsoft didn't have those. And I think I see all this stuff, and it's really just doubling down on that, right? Like, they want more support for their core studios, and that's why they're buying support studios, right? And they want more core games on PC, so they bought a PC porter, you know? Like, this all seems like very in line with that thing. And like, I think the reason why we're even talking about this is not that like Sony is suddenly making like is on an acquisition spree, is that like in a normal year, in a normal past or whatever, these announcements would be made on like PR Business Wire and we would write it up, of course, but like nobody would care, right? But now there's like this acquisition arms race happening, right? And suddenly like people, like these are like big news topics when like normally they wouldn't be, right? Like Rockstar buys support studios all the time, right? And renames them like Rockstar India or Rockstar, you know, whatever. But like nobody cares about it, but suddenly we do now, and it's just big major headline news for some reason.
No, I mean, I think you're totally right there, because there's even one I recently put up a piece, The State of PlayStation Studios, and obviously it was before this acquisition. We tried, we were like, there's no way they're going to do another after the four. We should be safe. So we published that. But, you know, one of the things that I talked about in there was Sony has a Malaysia studio that opened a couple years ago that helps other studios with art assets and the creation of animation and things like that. No one really talks about them, and that wasn't a big story 2 years ago, even, you know, when they opened. Obviously, the Insomniac acquisition was a big deal, but it's like, that's another support studio that's just in the stable, but no one really thinks about, but is there to help in the same way that it seems like Valkyrie or Nixus is. I think you're totally right, Matt, that it's like, Xbox created this cadence of the idea that, like, acquisitions define these companies, and so now we're in this funny arms race. I think you're totally right there. That's, like, kind of what we're seeing.
Well, yeah, like three or four years ago, no one would care.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they acquire something like Insomniac, which had already been making PlayStation games since Sunset Overdrive, you're kind of like, okay, now we know that. What's that?
Never a game before that.
Sony games since Sunset Overdrive.
Since Sunset Overdrive, they've been making exclusive. Like, have they made any Xbox games since Sunset Overdrive that have hit Xbox?
No, but I just mean like they've been working exclusively with PlayStation since the PS1.
And then Sunset was the outlier.
Except for Sunset.
Yeah.
Sunset was like
Excuse me, how dare you all Fuse. Yeah, thank you, Jay.
Yeah.
the game.
And so
we
what
shall
I'm
not
saying is, they already seem like they were pretty exclusive, right? And
yeah, sure.
And cheated on us once, and then came back. We forgave them. No. And so acquiring them just kind of ensures that it's like, yeah, we know that all future games from them are going to be exclusives. Where it's like, these choices may seem unexciting, and the results for them are probably not going to be very forward facing. People aren't going to understand what Valkyrie did on God of War Ragnarok, but them being exclusive could mean the difference of God of War Ragnarok coming out in 2022 versus 2023, right? And I think that those are things that people probably won't notice, but would be thankful for if they knew that that was the case.
Yeah, the acquisitions like this and Nix's can make a big impact on that. And I think it is going to, I'm sure we'll probably see a couple more of these in the year to come, but I do feel like PlayStation probably, you know, obviously they have not had a problem over the last decade of having really awesome exclusives. The problem I think they ever faced was just making sure they had enough of them, because as we mm-hmm. saw, like at the end of last gen, for the last couple years, the focus was on Spider-Man, Last of Us, Ghost, and Death Stranding over and over again, so much so that they stopped going to showcases because it was like, well, we're just going to keep showing these four games. And so, and you know, obviously there were other games that came out in those last couple years, like Dreams and Concrete Genie, but in terms of like those high profile ones. So I think PlayStation doesn't want to fall into that problem again, I would assume.
You mean they don't want to follow the Deathloop model?
And only show one game.
I've got to throw it out every episode now.
No, we've got to have a Deathloop. That's what Deathloop is all about.
We could not, though, and almost nobody would care.
Mark, don't anger the comments,
Mark,
like this.
It's 2021, Mark. It is the year of Deathloop. Not my game of the year, but it is the year of Deathloop.
Yeah. And then it's going to come to Xbox, and next year will be the year of Deathloop.
But no, I do think it is an interesting approach, and I do hope that it plays out over this generation, that we get to see these studios that are producing the first party games have that support, be able to put these things out at a reasonable pace, one that also doesn't overtax those studios specifically. Like, obviously, as crunch continues to become a bigger conversation in the industry, especially with studios like Naughty Dog often coming under fire for discussions around crunch, I think if Sony can give more support to those teams, it's only for the better for that stuff as well. So I'm curious to see if we get more acquisitions in the coming years, but hopefully it just means a cadence of more awesome first party games is kind of my mm-hmm. hope here at the end of the day. Any other closing thoughts before we move on?
Yay for video games.
How dare you?
Here. What?
Last thing I just want to mention on the news front was, if you haven't read it, please go check out Rebecca from our news team's wonderful follow-up piece about Sony and its relationship with its indie partners. This was sort of a follow-up to a report that we had earlier this year. When was it? It feels like both weeks ago and years ago. Back in July. Where,
split the difference. It was months ago.
Exactly. Where Reb sort of broke down the frustrations that many indie devs have been having in terms of getting promotion and support from PlayStation, sort of behind the scenes on the PlayStation Store, things of that nature. And I really love this follow-up. I definitely go recommend you check out the full report of it. But essentially, Rebecca kind of broke down kind of the key issues were, you know, behind the scenes tools and forms and processes for getting your questions answered, for getting support from Sony in the first place, actual just communication issues of not really having great communication with those partners, and helping to find ways to get actual promotion on the PlayStation Store in, you know, in front of PlayStation players outside of, I think it's in the article, sort of the usual suspects. And so, several people, including some of those that Reb spoke to previously, as well as a few others, did say that they have started to notice change and progress behind the scenes. And obviously there are like foundational things, it seems, within the tools that PlayStation actually use to talk to and deal with indie partners that need updating and fixing. But they seem to be in communication more. It seems like people were saying, you know, support emails they put in used to take weeks, if not months, to get answers if they ever did get answers. Now often are getting answered within a couple days. They are noticing a bit more support on getting those games, you know, prominently on the PlayStation Store. And we've even seen something, I think, this week with like Pray for the Gods, which is a game that's been announced for PlayStation for a while. Got a surprise drop on PlayStation. It got like big showcases on PlayStation's Twitter account several times. The PlayStation blog, the PlayStation store, at least for me, it was pretty well highlighted. You know, it seems like the issues are not 100% fixed by any means, but it's really good to see this progress being made. I don't know if any of you had a chance to check out the article, but just curious if any of you had it. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems that the biggest complaint is that Steam just does it so well, and they use algorithms to kind of, you know, curate lists where actual user engagement is what makes it where if there's like underground indie buzz about a game, people are checking that game out, and they're reviewing it, and they're downloading it, and they're wishlisting it, and that will make Steam automatically show it off more, and there's often sales and stuff like that, where, like you mentioned earlier, you know, the usual suspects, it's kind of like PlayStation has this curated list of just like, everybody loves X games, so that's going to be on the indie spotlight, right? And it's going to be like, you know, you're just kind of like, all right, well, some of these smaller people, yeah, it's kind of the same problem a lot of industries have, like Twitch, right? You go to Twitch, and if you make a brand new account, you're going to be shown the same 10 accounts, right? Like the 10 biggest Twitch streamers. And you could have someone who's doing really, really cool things, and they're averaging 20 viewers, and so they just aren't pushed because they're not averaging 10, 20,000 viewers that these Battle Royale shooters people are, you know, doing. So it's, I definitely understand the frustration there, that it's really hard to get noticed. And so I'm glad that PlayStation is taking the necessary steps to show off, because I play more indie games than I play regular games, or, you know, AAA games. So
regular games.
So I'm always happy to, I'm always happy to learn about really cool ones and see them get more promotion.
Yeah, I have a philosophy for me. Whenever there's like a sale on the PlayStation store and I see something that I want, so like I just recently picked up Kena because it was on sale, and it's just one I had kind of overlooked throughout the year because other stuff came out. But anytime I pick up a, like, and Kena is technically an indie game, but I bought something else. I can't even remember right now. But anytime I buy something in a sale from like a big AAA, I always go and look in the indie section and I buy some random indie title for like, you know, anywhere that's like $3 to $10. I spend an extra $3 to $10 to support an indie developer and I play their game. I think the last one I played was like Torin, which was this like like this Ico kind of like esque game. And it wasn't the best experience I played in 2021, but it was kind of a cool, just like way for me to experience something indies had done. And so that's just something I do to support the indie developers out there, because I know it's a hard time to get their game noticed. And I may not shout out every indie one I play, but I try to. So.
Yeah,
only games that cost $70.
That's it. That's
you only buy the big ones.
I'm very poor.
That's like, what? It didn't have a development team of 200 people? I'm out.
How dare you?
I'm out.
It didn't have a half a billion dollar budget?
How dare you waste my time?
Are you even a game?
No, it's cool. It's good, right? Like, it's always good, right? I think Sony in particular could probably improve the most out of the three. Like, just today Nintendo did an indie world showcase, right? And that's a really helpful way to get indies on the platform noticed. Xbox has been flirting with the ID at Xbox on Twitch streams, which has happened 2-3 times this past year, right? But like, PlayStation doesn't really do anything like that.
Their most recent state of play was all indies, so that's like.
But I think the state of play problem is larger, because that show varies so much time to time. Like, at least with Nintendo, you know, when they're doing an indie world showcase, what it's specifically targeting. Whereas with a state of play, it's like, okay, well, they said it would focus on Deathloop, but I'm also hoping they reveal Sly Cooper 5 because it's a PlayStation show. And so, like,
that's something they need to figure out. Because, I agree with Matt. If it's ID at Xbox, you know it's indies. And then, today's Nindy World Showcase. Where people were so mad at the most recent state of play, and they said it was going to be indies, but people see state of play. State of play is also where they showed 16 minutes of Horizon Forbidden West. So definitely a branding problem that they need to solve.
Yeah. And like, even then, like the most I think about like sales opportunities I associate with Sony. And the biggest one I always think about is Golden Week, right? Which is something that they do every year. And that's always like, because I know like, oh, if there's a cool JRPG that's out right now, I can wait for a couple months for Golden Week to happen and then pick up a cool Japanese game from PlayStation. And that's kind of like the most like notable sales event that I associate with PlayStation, right? Is that there's a week of the year where a bunch of cool PlayStation Japanese games go on sale. But there's like, you know, but it's not indie related, you know, so it's Sony doesn't really have a strong like indie brand, which is kind of weird for now, because like the PS4 era early on, they were hard into indies.
Yeah, well, it seems to go in this rotation of things where it was like Xbox to Nintendo for a little bit, to PlayStation, back to Nintendo, back to Xbox, back to Play. Like it does sort of go in a cycle of who's supporting indies the most. But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think like it's great to see this stuff behind the scenes, and I do hope we see more of it come to fruition publicly as well. Like there are occasionally indie focused PlayStation sales, but they don't get the same sort of like fanfare that a Golden Week sale does. And I think even on the State of Play bent, like PlayStation will, they have done a couple times this year. They're like, here are six cool indie games coming to PlayStation. And it's six different PlayStation blog posts doled out over like 2.5 hours. And that doesn't have the same impact as a 20 minute sizzle reel hype show where it's like, here are the cool ones. And I think like, those cost more to produce. Those are more intensive. Yes, but I do think that is getting more eyes in front of games for Switch or for Xbox with ID at Xbox. Then here are five blog posts for you to go read. And I kind of hope they start to lean into that. I will say like a huge shout out, like credit where credit's due, even as these changes were needed. I will say like, regardless of what happens on the actual PlayStation store, if you want to know the best indies to go play on PlayStation, you should be following Shuhei Yoshida, because obviously in his new indie role, like that man so consistently is highlighting and promoting and spotlighting the cool indies that are coming to PlayStation on his own personal account, and sort of has been excellent at doing that, you know, since his role shifted into focus on indie and partnerships in that way. And
Devs React to Speedrun episode ideas. Whatever she's tweeting about, I'm like, perfect.
Yeah, that's the way to go. But I hope we get to see more of this stuff front facing as well. But it's nice to hear that changes are happening behind the scenes. Obviously, it's not a like everything's fixed, we're good to go. But it is a sign of hopefully progress over this generation that we'll see. But you know, speaking of both the indie games and the exclusively only $70 games that Matt wants to play, I do want to spend only plays those. I do want to jump a little bit into what we've been playing over the last few weeks, and just kind of like what is on our radar as we head into our holiday breaks. And Jade, I'll start with you. What have you been up to playing recently?
Ooh, well, like I said, I just picked up Kena and finished it already. Was nice. A really fun experience. I definitely can kind of see when we were talking about it a couple weeks back about like, you know, hey, what about Kena? And you're like, Kena was fine. And yeah, it was, I feel like it was fine. I feel like it would have done so much better if it was a launch title for the PS5. I feel like it would have been received a lot better as a first kind of like sight of the PS5, not after seeing a few other things. But I really love
Majora's
the world.
Mask and the B-roll.
The creators of this made a Majora's Mask short, and this is actually where I first knew of them.
That's how they rose to fame. Yeah.
Yes, and that's so I was super excited for Kena leading up to launch, and then there's just other too much stuff coming out at the time. It just didn't make that instant day one purchase for me. But I loved it. I really liked the style. I feel like it would do really well if they did the Sony animation movie kind of thing like they did with Ratchet. I feel like Kena is a good idea for that. And then outside of that, I've been trying to work my way through Final Fantasy 14 like Matt whenever I can get in through the queue, and Tales of Arise, which I'm about 10 hours into Tales, and I think it's my favorite Tales game of all time now. They did such a great job with the quality of life improvements on this game. The combat is fun, the story is really well done. The main character is the same voice actor that did Noctis for Final Fantasy 15. So, Mark, you have a reason to play it now.
I'm in.
But yeah, I think I'm really digging Arise. It's one of those ones like the side quests all feel super valuable and worth my time to do. And so, like, I highly recommend playing Tales of Arise if you haven't got a chance to it and you're an RPG fan. Definitely give that one a shot.
I've had it sitting on my PlayStation basically since it came out, never having played a Tails game, but been like, this is beautiful, I should play this, and just
that is the other game I bought during the sale. This is Tails of Arise. So I can't remember the other game I bought. It was Tails of Arise. But yeah, totally worth it. I think it's on sale for like $60 with like the for all the special extra DLC stuff. Gotcha. The middle DLC pack is on sale. But yeah, totally worth it.
Nice. Well, glad you're enjoying that, and glad you're enjoying Kena as well. Yeah, I definitely recommend, especially if you get a PS5 for this holiday. Kena is a beautiful game, and definitely go check it out. And yeah, it's that studio's first game, so I can't wait to see what they do next.
It's also on PS4, right?
It is, yes, but just play it on PS5.
But it's terrible looking on PS4.
It's garbage. I just haven't played it on PS4, so I don't know. Mark, what about you? What have you been playing?
Gosh, I am all over the place. So I had to make a video for Spider-Man. And I realized
I realized
that game's pretty fun. And
a brave take on this show, let me tell you. Yeah.
Probably one of the first people to say that. And so I have the platinum in both the Spider-Man games, but I never played the DLC. So I'm playing through the DLC, trying to figure out if Spider-Man is a spider dad. I don't know yet, so don't spoil it. I'm still working my way through the first one. We'll see how that goes. Okay. I'm also playing a lot of Halo Infinite multiplayer.
Get out of here.
You know, I'm saying the H word on the PlayStation podcast. What a game. What a game that is. Halo is back, and I am loving that. And then I'm also playing Dark Souls, because I've never beat this game. And so me and my friend Cosma are playing through all three Dark Souls games in anticipation for Elden Ring. So we're co-oping them, because I've never beat them. And so she's going to carry me through them. And then I've also been playing this little truck game called SnowRunner. What a video game that is. You're like picking up lumber and you're building bridges. There it is. You're getting stuck in the snow. You're getting snuck in the mud. Snuck in the mud. This is a real fun game, and I'm sure there's one person out there that's going to comment and be like, yo, SnowRunner's great. And to them, I want to say, I love you. I see your comment, and I probably responded to agree with you, because this game is actually really fun.
I've heard very good things about it, so yeah, I'm not sure. I just haven't... I used to play these games during my PC class in, like, elementary school. And so I just haven't played a game like this in that long, but I assume it's very fun. I've only...
Oh, look at him, he's stepping over! That hasn't happened to me yet. I see that I'm in for some trouble. Oh, man, I'm getting worried now. This is just a montage of everything that can go wrong in this game.
This is a really like harrowing B-roll clip. Like, I'm emotionally invested in these cars climbing over rocks.
Are they gonna make it?
Well, Matt, while you try to shake the pressure of what these trucks are going through off, what have you been playing as well?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can recover from this. This is a real, like, homeward bound energy from this truck game, actually.
You just
like,
want them to make their deliveries. And yeah,
they're,
out
just,
there,
they're just there trying their best. Yes, as folks from who watched the video and saw the opening joke, I'm also playing Final Fantasy XIV Endwalker, attempting to every... day after work at 5 p.m. I log on and then I go make dinner, because then I don't get in for 2 hours. But when I do get in, I enjoy myself immensely. It's great. It's a really good time. I'm trying to take it easy, trying to take it slow, which the queue kind of helps with. But I also want to...
Both intentionally and unintentionally.
Yeah, right. But I also want to beat it before I leave for the holidays, because I'm going to go visit my family. So I do kind of have like a weird deadline now that's like kind of approaching, but sure. I think I'm close. I'm really close to the max level. This is actually now not the best. I feel like I've talked about Final Fantasy 14 on the show multiple times, and every time I come on, I'm like, this is the best time to play it. Now is not the best time to play it, because the wait lines are real and you will encounter those. So actually, if you are a new player who's super interested, maybe wait a bit, because I think it's going to be a little frustrating.
Didn't they say that they're prioritizing people with regular accounts over newcomers?
Yeah, well, they're regular paid accounts over trial members.
There you go. Yes, that's
what I heard. I don't know if that... I haven't verified that, but maybe. But yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I think that if you're keen on checking it out, maybe wait like a month or two for the stuff to sort of regulate itself and sort itself out. But right now is the time for fans. Right now it's time for the people who want to see the end of this beautiful, beautiful journey.
Yeah. I recently got back into it with this expansion, and I realized I'm nowhere near as far as I thought I was in the main story. Mm. Like, I literally am early, Stormblood?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm way behind.
Right, like, you've got 100 hour left.
I've got
I'm in Shadowbringers, so, yeah.
Oh, you're getting close then. Okay, yeah. That's not too bad.
Oh, wait, is Shadowbringers after Stormblood?
Yes.
I'm right in Stormblood. Before. Never mind. I'm in Stormblood also. Yeah, I'm also extremely far behind.
Time to group up. Time to group up, Darnell. Let's get on the same server.
Good luck to the both.
300 hours later, we'll get there.
Can PlayStation people play with PC people?
Yep. Yes. Yeah, it's all cross. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's great. And it's kind of crazy, right? Because, like, the PlayStation controllers is both very smart and also, still doesn't compare, in my mind, like, to playing on mouse and keyboard, right? Because you just have... How many keys are on a keyboard? 33? 40,
at least 12.
50? At least 12. Like, more than 12.
Back in the PS4 days, and I remember it working super well. Like, you hold R2 and a whole bunch of buttons come up. You hold L2. Yep. If you hold them both, then it's it's very well done.
It's a super smart system. It's still a lot, and you kind of have to be a master of it. But I raided with people who play on PlayStation controllers, and I am in awe because it's nuts.
Yeah, I'm a PlayStation player, so.
Well, that's powerful.
I would definitely be playing on mouse keyboard for sure.
Instructing people how to do extreme instances is not fun on PS4 or on PlayStation when you're the person who has all the experience of running these extreme instances and you get pulled into one and it's just like, okay, you got to move over here and we need two people to separate and don't go too far away, otherwise you'll stun, and it's so much. But yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I've been playing as a healer. And so I got pretty used to it on PlayStation. We also found someone who did a pretty good, here's the best optimal way to click around to make it easiest for you to customize. But I took a big break and then went back into it and did a dungeon and just completely screwed my team over because I forgot all the button combos to press and I could not heal fast. It was just not going well.
I had that same issue. My highest class is my paladin. I'm at 69. I just figured that was the best way to leave it last time I stopped playing. And then all the experience got reset. But I went in, I did one of those little level 10 instances or whatnot, just to kind of reacquaint myself. And I didn't tank anything. Like, my DPS tanked that whole fight. My healer had to. I swapped over to my ninja for my leveling up through the main story quest now, because it's like, I just need to play DPS and learn everything before I jump back to my paladin or my white mage.
It's probably sacrilege to say whatever, but the PS5 version and PS4 version also does support mouse and keyboard if you wanted to, correct?
Yep. On my PS4, I had a keypad that I attached to my PS4 controller I'd use, but also I had a keyboard. I have a small numpadless keyboard next to my PS4 and PS5 that I can plug in when I do need to type to people.
Sick.
But yeah.
Very nice. I also, for anyone who maybe has never played an MMO or is very scared about jumping into this massive game, I did it earlier this year and it was very easy to do outside of learning the controls. But yeah, it's for a standard controller, I think it adapts that stuff very, very well. So yeah. But Matt, I think your call of maybe wait a month or two if you're like, I should check out all this hype for Final Fantasy 14. If you're a newcomer, maybe wait a little bit. Yeah.
And Matt,
this is my secret plan to get people to stop queuing in, actually.
There you go.
Take a Matt, beat.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but isn't it free trial all the way up to level 60 or the end of Realm Reborn or something like that now?
We are not doing this meme. We want less people to play the critically acclaimed MMORPG Final Fantasy 14
trial
that now includes the critically acclaimed DLC and Heavensward.
There you go. You did it in one. I like it.
But we want less people in, not more.
I agree. That is true. Right now, for at least for the next month.
Right.
Yeah. Give us 30 days.
Come back in a month or two when I'm done with the campaign. Then go have as much fun as you want.
Jump on that meme in February.
I'll come tank for you in your parties. Just message me. Just give us a month to finish the campaign.
Absolutely right.
Perfect. Well, and then, yeah, on my end, I have been waiting to jump back into Final Fantasy XIV for that very reason, because I am nowhere near Endwalker. I was revisiting Spider-Man a little bit as well, because I wanted to just do a couple photo mode shots with the new No Way Home suits, because that is just how I spend my time now in Spider-Man, because I can't wait for Thursday. So I was doing that for a little bit, and yeah, it just continues to be so, so fun. And I've also been playing as Spider-Man in Fortnite, because that is a thing as well now, too. And there is web swinging in Fortnite, which is a weird thing to say. But it doesn't control too badly. It actually, it takes a little while to get used to it, but it's integrated, I'd say, relatively well. You don't need to be Spider-Man. You basically can just go get the item around the map and pick it up, and you can car surf, which is really great. So you can webline to a car and just have someone like pull you around, which is really awesome. There's a lot of like on ground web surfing that you can
just
do.
Like in the hit movie Teen Wolf. I didn't know that this movie,
it's entirely based on that.
I love the clip that we're watching. It's just Spider-Man with a
gun.
With an assault rifle.
Yeah. Oh no, that continues to be my favorite thing about Fortnite, is I can be like, yeah, I'm jumping in to Fortnite to play as Kratos with an assault rifle while throwing grenades and fireflies at people. Mm-hmm. It's just bizarre.
I just love that he also wasn't swinging. He's Spider-Man, and he's just running on the ground.
Yeah. He can't swing.
Giant gun. Look,
he has all the powers of a man, all the powers of a spider, and all the powers of a marine, okay? That's what he's called Spider-Man.
Did he have a sword? He had a sword.
Yes. I mean, I will say it's accurate.
Ninja
to
Spider-Man, Mark. Spider-Man. Ninja Spider-Man.
True.
I haven't seen the new movie. Maybe he has a sword in the new movie.
Yo, Tom Holland works really hard for the next one, okay?
He gets to go to gun training. He's like, guys, I just got done filming Uncharted, and I brought all this stuff with me. And they're like, is that a gun? He's like, yeah, let's put it in the new movie.
Kevin Feige's like, I can't allow this. But he doesn't. Yeah, Tom has all the power. But yeah, yeah. It's been fun to be Spider-Man. It's a brand new map. It's a brand new chapter. So I've been having fun there. And then, yeah, I've just been kind of like jumping in between things, because I am actually going to be without a game console for most of the holiday break. Nice. So I don't want to start a game and then not be able to play it for 2 weeks. So makes I haven't sense. Been playing much else, but that's a little bit of what we've been playing ahead of our holiday breaks.
Can I add one more? Matt, you were playing, I think you were talking about the Matrix demo, right? Were you playing
that? Yeah.
I played it too.
Playing it, or, you know, taking photo modes in it.
I've been experiencing it.
Same thing. All right. Experiencing it. Yeah. It was cool. I helped out Destin with his preview for it, and he was talking about how he didn't know in the opening moments like what was real and what was generated on Unreal Engine. And I didn't see the experience yet when I was looking it over, but when I got in, I was like, oh yeah, this is like, I know what he means now. Like, it's I was also playing that game where I'm like, is this Unreal Engine 5 Keanu, or is this real Keanu, you know?
Well, and at the end, when you get to just walk around the city and like drive and stuff, like it's insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I turned off all the traffic, and I think the top speed I hit was like 152 in the sports car. It was really tough.
I still need to jump in.
Oh, it's great. Every generation, I'm like, how can they get better like visuals in the next console, right? Like, we're definitely hitting that ceiling now. And then I saw this, I'm like, oh, they just like lifted it again. So now.
Yeah, what you're seeing on screen, you get to bring up a control menu and you can change the traffic and all that stuff. And you just run around for as long as you want. You can fly too. Kind of. The camera can fly. Yeah. It's pretty insane.
I love the fact that how they kind of showcase how like the different polygons and everything, for you can turn on these different filters to see how things are made. There's different plaques scattered around the world where you can go and see how things are made. And there's also like little like challenges and stuff like that don't actually time you. Like, there's one, it's like a the highway loop. It's like Trinity can make the highway loop in under 4 minutes. Can you? And so like, that's when I turned off all traffic and tried to hit 150 doing loops on the highway. But yeah, I really love this. I think it's so cool. And it really shows what the next gen is going to be possible. What's going to be possible in the next generation with Unreal 5. Like,
what
there's just so much detail. This is an actual clip of me driving before I turned off the traffic.
Well, I think I found your problem. You were on the wrong side of the road.
I was on the right side of the road. I was on the right side of the road. So, you know, whatever side of the road I'm driving on is the correct way. I am the player in the Matrix, not the NPCs.
Sure.
this isn't my footage. But I'm so excited to see this. Like, just everything, the detail in the world is so phenomenal. I can't wait to see things like the games take advantage of Unreal 5 and just what we get out of it this generation.
Yeah, Tota, as you were saying earlier with a couple games we were talking about, like, we're just at the start. No one's taken full advantage of these consoles, and we're getting new engines like this. So as they get to learn all this stuff, we're going to get toward the really, really cool looking and I think feeling next gen stuff that we all want to see. So yeah, this is cool. I really need to go jump into this. But yeah, thank you for bringing that one up. And thank you all for joining me for this episode. I think that largely wraps us up. Before we leave, does anyone have anything that they want to plug? Anything going up on IGN either now or over the holiday that you want to make sure people check out that you can talk about?
I mean, I already plugged it earlier, the Matrix thing that I'll be at for this weekend, but that's pretty much it for me.
Mark, anything?
We have one final episode of Devs React to Speedruns goes live this Saturday. It's for Death's Door. Everybody's a big indie game that people love. It's a fun episode. I largely had them turned down because I'm going to play the game over the holiday break, and I don't want to sit there and just like get spoiled on it. So I was like, yep, the levels are going, and I can kind of hear them. I don't want to actually hear what they're saying. So maybe it's a fun episode. Maybe it's awful. We'll see. and then we'll be back in the new year for more Devs React. Yay! That's it.
Nice. Matt, anything on your end from the new side of things?
I have Spider-Man tickets on Thursday.
Yes.
Me too. Spider-Man. I cannot wait. I've gone basically Twitter blackout because it's like the reviews are from No Way Home are pouring in. And I'm like, well, then I'm pouring out. I don't want to see this stuff.
I haven't muted anything. I'm
going to
live dangerously.
Yeah, well, I'm living dangerously. Let's see what happens. If if he dies, he dies, right?
I didn't read our review. I saw the score we gave it, but I didn't read the review. And I'm going to watch it tomorrow. So I'm like, I'm just going to watch it. Then I'll go.
Mark, I'm going to probably suggest you don't look at the comments of this episode, because if we have just said we don't know any of the spoilers, people are probably going to spoil. that is how the internet works.
Speaking of comments, I will plug two of our people on Twitter that responded to one of your posts, Darno, around Beyond stuff. So we have Bango Skank at D. Galatovich. I don't know if that word's allowed, but it is. It's there now. I would like for them to re-release Persona 5 Royal for any reason, just so they can make some sick Persona plates we were talking about the PS5 plates. And I figured you would love that. That's the only reason
I would love
that
some
one
Persona
up.
Plates. Yeah.
Yeah. And then,
for my non-work related projects that I don't know if I can talk about on this show.
Yep. And then for another topic we talked about around the plates as well, Tim Bob Wee at Lunchbox_Inc.
Yeah,
that's what I've been theorizing for a while. Release special plates to fit the console instead of collector's edition consoles. So we got a few people in the audience that are agreeing with us already. Thank you guys for submitting some theories and hype things and other suggestions and thoughts and other words.
Totally. And as we were saying last week, we want to obviously continue to involve you all in the show next year. So again, please write in to beyond@IGN.com with your memory card stories of your PlayStation gaming history that you want to share those on the show. Subject line memory card for those. Or if you have any like memorable trophies that you've gone for, that you hated going for, that you loved going for, any that you had a really great tip you wanted to share for those, you can also write into beyond@IGN.com with the subject line trophy tips. And we're going to start making those a regular part of the show into next year. But otherwise, that's going to wrap us up for this week's episode and this year of Podcast Beyond. Jada, Mark, and Matt, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. Had a blast.
I had nothing better to do. So it's fine.
Thanks as always for that stirring emotion. And thank you to Tayo behind the scenes for making the show happen. And also, even though he's not currently here, thank you to Red for making the show happen throughout the year as well, our regular producer. And Tayo, thank you so much for stepping in right before the holiday as well. And as always, thank you to everyone out there for listening, for watching, for supporting the show, for writing in, for commenting, for telling us how silly we were about an opinion. For letting us know your thoughts on some of the biggest news of the year. We're really excited to be able to do it again next year. So until then, we'll leave you as we always do. Hoping you're safe, hoping you're staying well, hoping if you celebrate, you have a wonderful holiday. And as always, beyond.
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 Game scoop.
No. Matt, it's the last one.
Start the episode over.
We got to redo it from minute one. Beyond, everyone. Happy holidays. Run it back.
I'm taking some of Matt's comments because I like them.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit habit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.